truth be told, we helped the wrong person steal the wrong thing. We didn't mean to unleash the greatest evil the world has ever known. But we're gonna fix it.
So how do we pull that off? Figure it out over a drink?
Probably best.
You need Kool-Aid!
Then give us a fighting chance.
We're gonna need strength.
You got this, right?
I know you don't.
We also need courage. Back to school. Magic.
And you.
What is that again?
It's an owl bear.
Let's go!
Bowser is coming. Together, we are going to stop that monster.
How? Look at us. We're adorable.
Oh, I got this. No problem. Yes!
Come on, Mario! Our big adventure begins now!
Get it off!
There's a huge universe out there.
Whoa.
With a lot of galaxies. They're all counting on us.
Mario!
No pressure.
Hello, it's me, Rob Daniel. Welcome to the Movie Robcast, and I'm happy to say I'm joined by my learned co-host, Mr. Rob Wallace.
And it is I, Robert Wallace.
Fuck you, Rob, you said you were going to do that as well. So, obviously today we are talking about...
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, obviously today we are talking, as we are going to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, and we're also talking about the Super Mario Brothers movie. And for anyone who was really, really offended by that accent, well, my great-grandmother was from Italy, so it's absolutely fine for me to do that terrible, terrible accent. Rob said he was going to do it as well, but then he didn't, because...
Because I don't have the Italian ancestry, so...
Cowardice. Just kidding. So... Might record an alternate to that as well, just to see how that sounds. Hello, and welcome
to the Movie Robcast. If I prevent him from recording an alternative to that, he has to use this one.
I'll just do it tonight. Obviously, I'm going to leave all this in now.
The trick is to say something now that sets up something that I reference later on, so that he can't cut out the original reference.
Can't cut around any of this. They love all this. They love seeing how the sausage gets made.
So much sausage.
Don't think the sausage got made in a massive car crash, Robs. Oh, it does. It really does. Anyway, okay, so yes, we are talking about two films today, Dungeons & Dragons and the Super Mario Brothers movie. And there's some other things we've seen as well, so we're going to bring those in too. A film that everyone should see, if you can, because it's not on at that many cinemas, is Lola. And Lola is with an Irish movie, but set in England during World War II. It's a sci-fi film. And I saw it at Fright Fest last year, so anyone who's listened to the Fright Fest episode from last year would have heard me wax lyrical about Lola. It was my number one film of the festival then, and it's brilliant. It's written and directed by Andrew Legg, and it's about these two sisters who invent a machine during World War II, or at the beginning of World War II, that can basically intercept radio signals from the future. And that's quite handy if you have a country that is planning to attack you at different times. And who knows, they might be able to intercept the radio broadcast to find out exactly when the attacks are going to take place and do something about that. They also intercept radio signals from the future, so they get into what is the pop culture of the distant future, which is the 1970s primarily. I think there's some 60s in there as well. It's a what-if film, obviously, because it's a movie, not everything goes according to plan. The way that the story shifts and turns is just absolutely fantastic. It has amazing special effects. And it's a low-budget film. It's shot in black and white. I think it was shot on a Bolex or something like that. So it's kind of like Bait, which is the Mark Ennis film. But it doesn't have that sound quality that he goes for, because he records his sound separately afterwards, doesn't he?
So you're doing Mark Jenkins.
Mark Jenkins, sorry, yes. Yeah, because
he did Ennis Men.
Yeah, indeed. So I think it has sync sound recorded there and then, or it sounds like that. It's a low-budget film. The special effects, though, are absolutely fantastic. And it does a lot of things where it will take footage from the time and then we'll change it to represent this new reality that's happening because of how they're influencing the war. I thought all this was done on computers and was like a digital manipulation. Apparently it's all optical printing, it's all kind of analog, and they just got certain shots of things and printed them onto other shots of things. Can't really say what those are because it would spoil it, and I'd say it's a film that you don't want to know too much about
is
before you go in.
Is it Forrest Gump?
It is that sort of thing. It's very, very much like Forrest Gump, and that is one of the films that you will be reminded of when you see that, the way that certain things from history then have some of the characters in there as well and things like that. It is kind of like that in terms of the effects, but they're really good, and it just has some of the best moments or sequences from the year, I think, and we're only like 4 months into the year. There's a couple of sequences in this film that are like, okay, this is absolutely dazzling. So we are on one laptop today. Could you look up the names of the two lead actors in the film who play the sisters?
Is it Stephanie Martini and Emma Appleton?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, so Stephanie Martini is Martha. The whole film was kind of presented like a home movie that she's making. And there's some newsreel footage in there as well. Emma Appleton is Thomasina. They're both genii, but Thomasina is kind of more driven by her intellect and not as much by emotion. It's a good, unusual take on the time travel story. And I think it comes in at 75 minutes or something like that. So it's a quick film. And to continue a cliche, yeah, I just found this more exciting than John Wick Chapter 4, which is going to be a thing that goes throughout the entire year. And you're going to hear that again on this podcast. This film is the best film released this month. It's going to be in my top 10 of the year. And
I'm very much hoping to see it this evening.
Yes, it has got a cinema release. It's not playing at too many cinemas, to be honest. I think most people who listen to this are going to watch it at home when it hits one of the streaming services. Probably get released to rent in a couple of weeks, I would imagine. But yeah, Lola, as soon as it comes out and you see it on your streaming service of choice, it's well worth a rent. If you can catch it at the cinema, do that, because I saw it at the Cineworld Empire, or Cineworld Leicester Square, whatever it's called, in their smaller big screen. And was so happy that I got a chance to see it on a big screen, because some of the sequences in it, as I said, are absolutely dazzling and visually just top notch. So yeah, and it's got songs in it written by, is it Neil Hammond from the Divine Comedy?
Neil Hannon.
Hannon, that's it. Yeah, so Neil Hannon of the Divine Comedy does the songs that they begin to find on the future broadcasts. Some of them are just very, very clever indeed. That'd be a really good, and actually genuinely good songs. Yeah, I loved it. It's called Lola. Rob presumably will give his thoughts on it in the next episode. But yes, if you can find it, then see it at the cinema. If not, then you should rent it as soon as it comes to streaming. So that's Lola. You saw a couple of films as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw Air, which is the Ben Affleck directed...
This is about Prince William, right? And there's a spin-off one called Spare.
Okay. It's a biopic about a shoe, about the origin of the Air Jordan, a famous basketball shoe. And yeah, it's about this Nike employee who is struggling to, the company's basketball division is struggling. It's like mid-1980s. And this guy, Sonny Vaccaro, played by Matt Damon, nobody wants to go with Nike. Everybody wants to go with Adidas or Converse because they're kind of seen as like, the cooler shoes. And he comes up with the idea of like, oh, what if we, instead of like investing money in some lower, less priority players, we just go for one, one player and build a shoe line around him. And that doesn't sound like the basis of high drama, but it's really smart and funny and well observed. I mean, it's essentially a film that is like valorizing a product, but it's done with sufficient like humor and heart, written by a guy called Alex Convery. I think it was on the blacklist. Apparently the cast did a lot of work on the material but apparently Ben Affleck said, nope, you're getting sole screenwriting credit, because when we started out, that's what made it for us, is getting that credit. But it's Matt Damon, it's Ben Affleck playing the company owner, Jason Bateman playing like a marketing guy, Marlon Wayans, Chris Messina as this brilliantly foul-mouthed lawyer who gets like one of the best rants I've seen in cinema in the last couple of years, like properly foul-mouthed, full-blown Malcolm Tucker, Glengarry Glen Ross style vitriol down the phone.
Right.
Which is like just inherently entertaining.
Yeah, if it's done well, then it can be great to watch.
Chris Tucker, Viola Davis is in it, playing Dolores Jordan, Michael Jordan's mother. And apparently Michael Jordan suggested her for the role because he was like, I don't think he's a producer, but he was like consulted, because obviously it's kind of partly about him. I really enjoyed it. I think it's really smart and sharply written. not one that you desperately need to see in the cinema. It's a Prime Video release, so it'll be going on Prime Video.
Right.
It's their first day and date theatrical, I think, since Late Night? Or sorry, their first opening and theatrical since Late Night.
Okay. Which one was Late Night again?
The Emma Thompson, Mindy Kaling film.
Yeah. Well, that's been a while then. Because that was their business model for a while, because Suspiria came out in cinemas first. I mean, that's the thing, they would release in cinemas first.
Yeah, and then...
And then they would put it on to Prime Video like a month or so later. But the pandemic obviously did for that in a way. So it's funny because Operation Fortune, which is the Guy Ritchie film that gets released, well, actually, because we're recording this on the 8th of April, it was released yesterday onto Prime Video, was a film that this time last year was supposed to get a cinema release and then completely vanished. I mean, I saw so many trailers for that film, completely vanished. Everyone kind of forgot about it. And then realised, oh, it never got released, did it? And now it's going straight to Prime Video with no cinema release.
I've seen it.
And?
It is fine. It is better than The Gentleman.
Which did get a cinema release.
Yeah. The script is very Guy Ritchie, very bantery, very cast are good. The only time that Guy Ritchie does his kind of trademark playing with time, you know, flashback and show, it's such a weird moment because it's, you know, Orson Fortune, the Jason Statham character's just got out of the situation and he's just, you know, got away somehow from two guys. And you just kind of go, yeah, he's got away from them. It's comic because they built it up to be a moment and that they underplayed it. And then they suddenly flash back to show how he got out of it. And you're like, why? You've just killed the joke. It's...
I kind of half remember the story. Is he like a movie star who has to go undercover?
Yeah, who gets roped in because that's how the team are going to get to this arms dealer who's played by Hugh Grant, who's just doing his kind of sleazy Mockney Hugh Grant. Not the last time he'll be mentioned in this podcast.
Mm.
It's fine. Air is much better. Like, Air got good reviews. Like, Air getting good reviews was kind of made me think, like, it's a movie about a shoe in a sport that I have no particular interest in, but it's got a good cast and it's directed by Ben Affleck and yeah, fine, I'll go and see it. And yeah, I mean, you can wait till it comes up on Prime.
Yeah, I will. I'm trying to think if there's been a Ben Affleck film that I haven't enjoyed. I think I've enjoyed pretty much all of them.
The Great Wall.
Well, that was Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
And he didn't actually direct that, did he?
A Ben Affleck directed film.
Yeah.
Live by Night.
We liked that.
It was fine.
we saw that at the cinema. I mean, it was fine, but it was not bad. I mean, that was a perfectly agreeable movie. Baby Gone, I enjoyed that, apart from the ending, which I thought let it down. Argo, I liked. I know you are not a huge fan of Argo, but I did like Argo. I don't think what else he's done. Is that it?
The Town?
Of course, The Town. That's his best film, actually. My God, I'm forgetting The Town.
Yeah, if I had to rank them in order of liking them, I'd probably say The Town is still my favourite, then Air, then Gone Baby Gone, then Live by Night, then Argo. In fact, Argo's probably better than Live by Night, but I still don't like Argo because it shouldn't have won Best Picture.
You have to let it go at some point, Rob.
Never.
No, I'm still smarting over Goodfellas and Dances with Wolves, and that was 30 years ago. You said another film.
I saw Tetris.
Tetris, yes, indeed.
Another film about the origin of a popular product.
Of a popular Nintendo product.
Yeah, it's kind of like, in terms of the Venn diagram between Air and the Super Mario Brothers movie, we have got Tetris.
Yeah, dude. It's weird that we're going to talk about, or that you're going to talk about, two films based on Nintendo games in the same podcast. It's like, wow. So Tetris, this is the Taron Egerton one where it's about the creation of the game Tetris, also in the 80s.
And it's directed by John S. Baird.
Who did?
Who did Filth, who did Stan and Ollie.
Okay. So he's got a good pedigree because they were two very good films. Filth should never have worked and worked really well.
And yeah, it's about this guy, Hank Rogers, in late 1980s, and he comes across Tetris at this game show. And then discover it's created by this Russian programmer and essentially ends up competing with Robert Maxwell and son for the game rights and like chicanery. He goes out to Russia and there's lots of like double dealing and corrupt officials. Yeah, Robert Maxwell is a character in it, played by Roger Allam.
Wow. Okay, now I wanted to see it anyway, but now that has really piqued my interest.
And
does he do the Australian accent?
He does the accent, yeah, he does an accent.
Brilliant, because he had a very strong, broad Australian accent, did Maxwell.
And then there's, his son is a character in it, you know, Kevin Maxwell, who is such a boo-hiss bully baddie in it, who like literally in one scene throws a fit and just like knocks something breakable off an underling's desk.
Right.
Yeah, just like pettily, just kind of...
So does Ghislaine Maxwell appear in it as a character?
No.
I wonder why.
I think that would have been, a thing to open. That would have been, but yeah. And it's basically on partly a French, about a friendship movie between Hank Rogers and Alexei Pachnitov, who was the Russian programmer who created it, basically like DOCSI for, is it called DOCSI format? Basically, the first version of it he created, the blocks were parentheses.
Oh, right.
Or were they, yeah. As in like, because they didn't have, he didn't have a graphics card.
Wow.
It's a film that I got on with it. It's, you know, they've got some really stylized moments of it where they play with like the Tetris and there's like a car crash scene in it. And when cars wipe out, they like derez.
Right.
It's solid. It's available on Apple TV Plus.
Monkey Dog.
Yeah, it's got a good cast. It's Toby Jones pops up. Toby Jones is in this. Ben Miles.
Okay.
Do you know Ben Miles?
I know the name.
Patrick from Coupling.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes, he is forever Patrick from Coupling. Yeah, I've heard it's one of those where it's like, this is a fast and loose Confessions of a Dangerous Mind type retelling of a true story. Probably none of this is true. They are just having fun with a weird, over-the-top fable. Yeah.
And it's a Marv Studios film, which means Matthew Vaughn is a producer on it.
Yes, who was the director of Kick-Ass and whatnot. Yeah, and of course, he did The Kingsman with Taron Egerton.
And Eddie Leagle.
Yes, which
also
was really good.
Also with Taron Egerton.
Yes, and was, again, a film that didn't have a huge amount to do with reality, but I really enjoyed that film.
It's interesting because it's one of those films that obviously ends with the kind of, as Air does, with the, this is what happened next, this is how this all played out, you know, the game has gone on to sell X million, like half a billion copies. And it does note, like, you know, after the mysterious death of Robert Maxwell.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
It's like, after the... Still, you know, kind of... Was it an accident?
He fell off a boat.
His naked body was recovered from the Atlantic Ocean. Like, that's pretty much Tenet as well, isn't it?
It's also the end of Tomorrow Never Dies. Because that was really, really recent history when, yes, Elliot Carver, the Jonathan Pryce character in that, was saying, well, what are we going to tell? I'll just say that he had an accident and fell off his yacht. That got a massive laugh for the cinema when I saw it. Yeah, I will see this one. I can remember.
Obviously, the name of the yacht
was the Ghislaine, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Lady Ghislaine.
Lady Ghislaine. That's right. Just, I mean, the way the history just unfolds is fascinating sometimes. So, a friend of mine, his brother had a Game Boy because, of course, it also launched the Game Boy, didn't it? I mean, it's weird with Nintendo. They release hardware, but the thing that sells the hardware is the one game that everyone becomes obsessed with. Because the N64, was it? Was GoldenEye. Like, a friend of mine called Dave, who always listens to the podcast, Hello Dave in New Zealand, he bought the N64. And I said, all right, so are you into gaming then? And he said, I'm into GoldenEye. So you spent like £100, this was in 98, I think, on a console for a game. And he said, yeah, but you've not played the game yet. So I played the game, and it was one of those things where, like, angels began to sing. Light shone down from the sky, and it was like playing GoldenEye that first time was like, I can't believe this is a game that you could just have in your house. This is transformative.
That has basically got the same thing when Hank and it first plays Tetris, and when he first sees the Game Boy, like, looking at it with just adoration. I mean, I had a Game Boy when I was a kid. And obviously the other early release, I can't remember whether it launched with Tetris or whether it launched with this other game, but the other game, of course, being that made the Game Boy, Super Mario.
Yeah, indeed. But that also really, really made the, well, what was called the NES, but the NES, so the Nintendo Entertainment System. We'll get onto that when we talk about Super Mario Brothers movie. But yeah, but GoldenEye was like, okay, this is astonishing. I can see why you bought this now, just to have this game when it's got two-player mode. And it was just, oh my God, we just played that game so much in his bedsit. He was in the same building as me, and we had bedsits on different floors. Oh, the late 90s, what a golden age. But yeah, like, I can remember playing Tetris on the Game Boy, and everything about it was just new in the future. Because I used to have the old, we wouldn't even call them like a console game, but before computer games, you would have a machine that would play a single game on there. And there was Munch Man, which was a knockoff of Pac-Man, and it was like a yellow orb, and you would just play this one game. And there was like a Space Invaders game, there was Frogger, they'd all just be their own little console. And the graphics weren't very good, it would be like a couple of colours. The music was really, really tinny. I remember my friend saying, play this, but play it with headphones on. So I'm like, okay, right. I'm putting headphones on. It was stereo, which was like, oh my God, there is stereo sound coming out of this game. And it sounded like music. It didn't sound like the tinny, scratchy thing that would be spat out by these earlier things. And there were different colours on screen. I mean, all this sounds like, oh my God, what was this like a million years ago when you were a caveman? But this was 1987, 8.
Well, do you remember when you used to be able to get MIDI ringtones and suddenly you were able to get little ringtones on your mobile phone?
Yeah.
Do you remember? I mean, that was a big thing for me. I still remember like being able to be like, gonna have music as a ringtone, and it's not like it's not the actual song, it's like a weird
ersatz version.
Ersatz, like, yeah, it's like it's the closest I think music's come to having pixels.
Yes, that's right, yeah, but it was recognizably the thing. And then you could get things that were the thing, and you could also get a particular song for a particular friend who's ringing you.
Yeah, just... I can buy it for just 99p on iTunes.
Like, my iTunes ringtone for ages was the ringtone from One Missed Call, the Japanese horror film, and no one got it. I was like, what is that?
And then I suddenly, you know, all of a sudden you could, like, record a sound or get a sound off online and, like, make it. And I had the smoke monster noise from Lost was the noise, you know, was my text noise.
Oh, wow. Remember a friend of mine, his ringtone was Darth Vader's breathing. Someone in the office who was a little bit younger said, why have you got wind as your ringtone? It's like, do you not know what that noise is? No. And someone else said, yeah, I was going to ask, why is that noise? It's like, that's Darth Vader's breathing. Is that Star Wars?
You've disappointed me for the last time.
You've disappointed me for the last time. I find your lack of nerd knowledge disturbing. So weird. So the Game Boy with Tetris on it, and it really was one of those where it was like, you can play one game on it, but you're not going to play more than that because you'll never be able to put it down. It's like, go on then. Can I have one more game, please? Because I don't want that to be the last time I ever played. That was amazing. Could I do that again, please? And so go on then. And of course, it was at that point where it's like, okay, we need to go out now. It's like, oh, but it's so addictive. It's so addictive. But I need making the shapes all
I
fit.
I need my tiny serotonin rush.
I do. It's like,
baby needs a serotonin.
Baby needs a serotonin. It's like, when you're older, there's going to be a thing that you walk around with that's going to make this look like one finger of a Kit Kat compared to crack. Welcome.
That this sounds like it's coming from a man who's eaten both Kit Kats and crack.
Yes, it is. Well, I just imagine that crack is like a bit more Moorish than a Kit Kat. But if you haven't eaten a Kit Kat before, so that was quite nice.
So, well, that's one of the things when I go to Japan, I need to try the, you know, the crazy variety of Kit Kats.
Particularly the green tea Kit Kat, which
like
I...
Like the matcha, like a matcha.
Yeah, I became obsessed with that when I was out there.
Do you want me to bring you some back?
Yeah, go on. That'd be ace, thank you. Because you're going next month, is it?
Yes, yeah. Slightly over a month from now, yeah.
Cool. That'd be ace. Yeah. You will have a great time. It is a wonderful country. Because the word Kit Kat sounds a bit like the Japanese word... I can't remember the actual word, but it sounds like what the students say to each other, which means good luck in the exam.
So you get them as like an exam gift to someone.
Exactly that, good luck in the exam. Which is why you then get lots of different flavours as well. I mean, there's like a white chocolate one, but there's green tea one, and there's just loads of them.
I mean, you just wonder why crack hasn't diversified in the same way yet.
I think because crack doesn't need to. Yeah. When you've got like a basic product that no one ever gets bored with.
It's like, you know, when they, yeah, I remember the disastrous campaign when they tried to pivot to new crack.
Yes, indeed. Doesn't make my teeth itch in quite the same way. And it still gives me that rush, but no, it's not quite there. It's like, I'm more crack classic.
And don't even get me started on crystal crack.
Yes, crystal crack was like, I mean, that should never have happened.
I think we might be on a tangent.
I believe this is a tangent. I shouldn't have smoked all that crack before we started recording.
Wait, you meant to smoke it?
That's right. Because I tend to bathe in it. I have to admit, I do let it absorb into my skin directly. It could be why my skin is beginning to slough off. So yeah, I'm more crystal now than man.
Tetris.
So moving on from that to one of the two kids' films we've seen recently. Oh, and they say we don't know how to appeal to a family audience. So what should we do first? Should we do Super Mario Brothers first, or
Let's do Super Mario Brothers first, because I guess we're coming off Tetris. So going from Tetris to... I mean, I'd say like a more natural segue, but we've just spent about a couple of minutes talking about Kit Kats and crack cocaine, so...
Yeah, and by a couple of minutes, that just shows how much that crack has destroyed your sense of time, because it's probably a half hour. So yes, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Would you like to do the honours and read out the plot synopsis?
Okay. The story of the Super Mario Brothers on their journey through the Mushroom Kingdom.
Is that what it says on IMDb?
It is.
I mean, that is, in a way, what happens in the film. There is a bit more plot to it than that. So, Yes, this is about two Italian plumbers who are brothers called Mario and Luigi. So Mario is controversially voiced by Chris Pratt and Luigi voiced by Charlie Day. While on a big job involving the flooding of Brooklyn, they get sucked into another dimension and they are in the Mushroom Kingdom. And they quickly discover that the Mushroom Kingdom is being threatened by Bowser, is it? Is that the name of the...
Yes, Bowser.
Who is voiced by Jack Black, and he's a big turtle, and he has a turtle army, and they are totally going to try and take over all of the other kingdoms. Boom. And the princess, so Princess Daisy, voiced by Anya Taylor-Joy, says, we have to stand up against the turtle, so the Mushroom Kingdom needs to stand up against the Turtle Kingdom, but we can't do that alone because we're so adorable and we don't actually have a very good army, and the Penguin Kingdom's already been taken over. So we need to go to Kong. Is it the Kong Kingdom?
Yeah, I think it's...
Or
Jungle Kingdom.
Jungle Kingdom. But it's the Kong King or something? They
Donkey Kong.
Yeah, but they say
the King Cranky Kong and there's Donkey Kong.
King Kong. They don't say that. Anyway, but there's a Kong thing. We have to get their army because they're monkeys and they can help us.
I mean, irrefutable logic.
Honestly, I know this still sounds like we're smoking crack. Honestly, this is what happens in the film. Irrefutable logic, as my learned scholar friend points out. Mario gets roped into this, as does Luigi. They have to go along on the journey. It is a hero's quest movie. It hits all the beats of a hero's quest movie. And yes, what did you think of the Super Mario Brothers movie?
I quite enjoyed it.
Hmm.
First, the animation's great. When they first arrive in the Mushroom Kingdom, it's like in a phrase I've never thought of. Wow, those mushrooms have real heft. Like
they do.
It's just...
And the water has heft. The animation in this film is one of those things where it's like there are certain shots, because it starts off in New York in the real world, and there are certain shots where it's like, well, that is photorealistic bar the
people. Style. Yeah, also, yeah, by the... Yeah.
It is photorealistic, but there's something about it that's still animated. It's a very interesting look they've got there because, my God, is that amazing animation. And that water just looks realistic because the water, to use a word that has recently been used, has heft. When it's coming at you, it looks like it's going to wash you away. It's like, this is amazing animation. And yes, and they go into the Mushroom Kingdom and everything there has heft. So that thing about zero gravity CGI just being a thing that stops you from believing in a world that's been created is not an issue with this movie, I don't think. But what else about it did you like?
The humour is surprisingly offbeat. Definitely that you were laughing consistently throughout.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably touch on the first Super Mario Brothers movie later. But everything makes sense within the context of the universe that you're seeing. And like there are some game references that you may or may not get, depending on whether or not you're a fan. It also has got things like the fact that the right-hand man, like the sorcerer assistant of Bowser, who is apparently voiced by a guy called Kevin Michael Richardson, who's a video game and animation actor.
And what's that character's name?
Kamek, although right. I don't think they really mention it in the film.
Yeah, I can't remember that name.
Sounds like Peter Lorre.
Yes. Sometimes he does, yes.
And it's like, why? Because it's like, it's such a specific reference. And I know that we talked about a bit about this in the cinema, that I like, obviously, like, animations, you know, Pinky and the brain was always, you know, voiced by Morrison Marchand, was doing Orson Welles, and, you know, they're these characters. You know. But it's like, this is a 1940s and 50s actor, you know, Austrian-born Peter Lorre, you know, incredibly, like, kind of nasally distinctive. But none of the kids in the audience are going to get that, I don't think. And probably most of the adults in the audience, they might think, I kind of recognise that voice. They might think, that, you know, from like Casablanca or Maltese Falcon and not know why.
Yeah.
But it's like, for some reason, it really tickled me. And I was like, I don't know why he sounds like Peter Lorre, but I'm on board.
Well, we'll get to that in just a minute, because there's a whole thing around pop culture in this film, and it's a wider thing.
It is a mushroom stew of pop culture.
Yes, indeed. So quickly, what I thought of this film... When you suggested, shall we do Mario Brothers and Dungeons and Dragons and have like a game double? It's like, yeah, fine. Let's do that then. And I'd already seen Dungeons and Dragons by that point. And it was like, really? So the Super Mario Brothers film, which up until about 2 weeks ago, I just assumed was live action. I had paid no attention to this film, thought that the controversy around the hiring of Chris Pratt was because it's like, well, are they going to try and make him look like Mario then? And Okay, so they're going to Mediterranean him up a bit and put a big tash on him. And then when it was like, no, it's a cartoon, it's like, oh, I know nothing about this film. I paid no attention to this movie. And we saw it at a 5:30 screening on Thursday after work and was like, I just can't believe I'm going to see the Super Mario for this film. And we went to a cinema just off of Leicester Square and there were some kids in the audience, obviously, because it's a kids' film. And I thought, oh, well, it's 90 minutes. That's fine. It's 90 minutes long, so at least it's going to be short. And yeah, really enjoyed it. It was like, I surprisingly good. I thought it was going to look cheap. I thought it was just a thing just to put it out just so that there's a thing to try and make some money during the school holidays. It's like, this does not look cheap. This is a brilliantly animated movie.
Well, it's by Illumination, who usually have got a pretty good track record.
Yeah, because they did...
Well, I mean, probably most people listen to them for, like, Despicable Me and the Minions films.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's directed by someone with a good pedigree as well. So who's...
It's directed by... Well, it's got two directors, which, of course, as we know from the first Super Mario Brothers film, was a great combo.
Yes.
Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelenic, who they developed the Teen Titans Go series.
That's right. And I think that one of the writers was involved with a Lego film, is that right?
It was written by a guy called Matthew Fogel, and I don't... His name isn't linking to anything. I'm currently, as you believe, on Wikipedia. He might have been.
IMDb would be able to say for sure.
Matthew Fogel, Lego Movie 2.
Right.
Minions, The Rise of Gru. Big Mamas, Like Father, Like Son.
These are popular films.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so this guy, I mean, yeah, he can do it as well. And I'm watching it thinking, okay, so this is fine. And then it was like, actually, no, this is, I think, it's a bit better than fine. The animation, even though the animation looks good and expensive, it's also imaginatively shot. It's one of those things where, and this is just to show how I watch a kid's film, a lot of the animation replicates different lenses. So you think, oh, that's a 44mm lens effect that they've got there. And that's a 75mm lens with that big close-up with the background out of focus. That looks really good. Now, they've got wide-angle lenses. They've really thought about how to shoot this film to give it a film look. It wasn't just that, though, because it was also, I thought, the story is a hero's quest story. It hits all the familiar beats. But there's an... I thought there was a nice kind of fairy tale feel to this. And it's partly because you go into, like, a magical kingdom and all the rules are different and there's some threat there, but it's not really that much threat, but there is some threat there. And there's lots of fantastical creatures and it's a fish out of water thing. So Mario and Luigi are having to learn the rules. And as you said afterwards, they work in the gameplay because the gameplay is how you navigate this particular world. So there's lots of references.
Like the power-ups and the...
And the power-ups and the poses that they sometimes strike in the game are replicated in the film. And there's Mario Kart in there as well. This isn't a spoiler because it's all in the trailer. And Donkey Kong is in there.
Donkey Kong voiced by Seth Rogen.
Yes, and is great, it has to be said. So there's all these things in there. It's like, this is... Is this the best example of a film that conveys why the games are so beloved? Because it's really capturing what's fun about the games without doing that thing of like, it's like watching someone play the game.
Yeah, without just recreating gameplay.
Yeah, that's right. Even though they do that as well sometimes in terms of there are scenes where it's just left to right scrolling and it's having to navigate different things and it's like, oh, that's really clever and really funny. So that was really good. And as you said, I did laugh the whole way through. It was consistently funny. The gag ratio is very high in this film. The voice cast is good. The characters, I mean, again, it's broad strokes fairy tale characterization, but the characters I thought were engaging and funny.
Jack Black sings there because they clearly cast him and went like, we have to give him a song.
And it is a funny song.
I mean, the voice cast, Chris Pratt, who actually acquits himself pretty well.
And let's get on to that because it's like, absolutely. Chris Pratt was out. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Chris Pratt. I can find him quite tiresome. He was absolutely fine in this movie. And there is a gag at the beginning where they are talking, which it references to that hilarious opening that I did with the broad Italian accents, where they are talking in an advert with broad Italian accents. It's like, hey, it's me, it's Mario, it's me, Luigi, hey, we are plumbers. And then afterwards it's like, do you think the accents were a bit too much? No, it's perfect. Is that what we needed?
And there are also Easter eggs because the woman from that, from the commercial, is apparently voiced by Jeannie Elias, who was the original voice of Peach.
Oh, wow, okay.
Oh, sorry, no, it wasn't the original voice of Peach, she was the voice of Peach in the Mario cartoons.
So is Peach, who is Peach?
Peach is Princess Peach, who's played by Anya Taylor-Joy.
So she's not called Daisy?
No.
It's just Daisy for the original Super Mario.
It's just Daisy for the original Super Mario.
Okay, right, yes. Yeah, because she's called Princess Daisy in
the most inexplicable decision that first Mortal Kombat made. But also, like, Charlie Day as Luigi, Jack Black, as we said. Do you want to guess who voiced Toad?
Oh, I did know this, and I've completely forgotten. Who was it?
Keegan-Michael Key.
That's right, yes. It was Keegan-Michael Key, that's
right. Do you want to guess who voiced Cranky Kong? Donkey Kong's dad.
No, go on.
Fred Armisen.
Yes, okay. And he was great, and you would not guess it was him. He was very good.
And
he was kind of channeling some of the King of the Swingers, as well.
And
from the Jungle Book, obviously.
And Mario and Luigi's dad was voiced by Charles Martinet, who was the original voice of Mario.
Okay.
John DiMaggio was in there. John DiMaggio, who voiced Bender in... played their uncle.
Oh, okay,
the one who keeps ribbing them.
So he was Bender in Futurama.
Yeah. And she was like, that's got a really good voice cast.
Amazing.
And the animation is great, and it's funny. A long time ago now, I saw the Angry Birds film, and it's fucking awful.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing, wasn't it? Jesus, remember
there's
that?
There's one joke in it which made me laugh, because it's so odd, which is like they've just been swimming, I can't remember what the characters are called, they've just been swimming in this pool. And then the guy who lives there, they're hiding from him, and then he just starts peeing in the pool, and they've realised that they've basically just been swimming in his piss. And it's like, that's a weird, that's funny because it so doesn't fit with the rest of the tone of the film.
Well, that's the other thing, is that this, because sometimes they will put those jokes in for the adults, and it's like, well, these always sit weird with the child-like humour of the, or the child-friendly humour of these films. This was a film... So the Super Mario Brothers movie, I thought, was a film that joined the two very well. You have that nihilistic star that has been imprisoned by Bowser and just wants the sweet relief of death. And
which is it's really chirpy while it's just like...
And the penguin king. Oh, good God!
And then when it gets saved from death, it starts frowning. It's like... Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So yeah, so there's lots of things like that in there. But sorry, just quickly to go back to Chris Pratt. It's like, okay, so it's not an Italian-American playing Mario. I don't know. I just thought, do you know what? As someone who has Italian ancestry, I am...
You're going to lean on that a lot, aren't you?
I'm going to lean on that a lot. I'm absolutely fine with that. I'm not a huge fan of Chris Pratt. I'm not going to rush and see the Guardians film. I find them tiresome, and I find him a bit tiresome in them. He was absolutely fine as Mario, I thought. I wouldn't fault that voice performance at all.
Yeah. He's a name, and he's not an entirely uncontroversial name for various reasons.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, he's fine. Him and Charlie Day, both good.
Yeah.
Great.
Indeed.
I mean, they're no Bob Hoskins or John Leguizamo, but...
Yeah, those two really, really famous Italian-Americans.
And we both rewatched the original Super Mario Brothers.
Let's get on to that in a minute, sorry.
There's a lot to unpack.
We have thoughts about that. So, Chris Pratt, I thought, was fine. I thought the whole controversy around it was just because he's not particularly beloved, and also because the internet will just get annoyed about anything, and it's like, oh, okay, so we're going to get annoyed about this now. I thought that Chris Pratt was fine. It's good that it's getting released on Easter weekend, because even though I played Super Mario Brothers, and that's the other thing, is that when the NES came out in the early 90s, a friend of mine bought it, and he bought it for Super Mario Brothers, to have Super Mario Brothers. So just like the N64, just like the Game Boy, the genius of Nintendo is, we know that this isn't enough on its own, we need to have a signature game that people are going to not get bored of, no matter how much they play it. And sometimes we'll only really buy this for one game. And my mate brought it round and we plugged it into the telly, which again was like this amazing thing. You can plug this arcade machine into the telly. And we played Mario. And it was like having an arcade machine in your house on your telly. And it was, again, it was transformative in terms of what home gameplay was. So brilliant. And yeah, it was just a very good game. And then I played Mario Kart in 2008 and only played it for one night when I went round to see a mate and his brother had got it. And I think it just came out at that point and we all played Mario Kart. And it was really, really good fun. But watching this film was like, it's good this got released on Easter weekend, because I know that there are a million Easter eggs in this film. I know that in so many shots, there are things that are referencing the games. What is great about this, and we'll also see this again when Dungeons & Dragons, is you don't need to know anything about the games to enjoy this movie. But it's there for the fans who will be aware of this entire universe that's been built out. So that kind of stuff, I thought, it understands it needs to be a film first and it needs to tell a story. But as we saw with the original Super Mario Brothers film, that was a film first and forgot that it was about a game.
Would you know the tagline for the original Mario Brothers movie?
What was it?
This ain't no game.
Yeah, well, they got that right.
It's like, yeah, it feels like you're really missing the point here. And that came out 30 years ago.
This year, yeah.
Well, it's nice that we're getting to do our retrospective.
Yeah. So very, very quickly, just about the pop culture in this film. Watching this film, I realise that pop culture is just this swirling broth and everything is just the same now. Everything is just kind of on that same level of like, this means this. So Peter Lorre is now just the same as a reference to the T-1000 in T2, which is the same as like a reference to Mad Max Fury Road, which is the same to a needle drop from AC/DC, which is the same as a needle drop from ELO. I mean, all the songs in this are old songs, which is the same as a reference to Kill Bill.
This is the second film about an 80s video game. An 80s Nintendo video game to include the song I Need a Hero that I've seen this weekend.
Yeah.
Because it's in Tetris as well.
So the pop culture broth is also in quite a small bowl sometimes as well. It's like, shouldn't we have an ocean of this? No, just this bowl. Sometimes a bit of Peter Lorre will splash over from another bowl and we'll put that in as well. But it really is like,
oh no, I've splashed. That was a terrible Peter Lorre.
That was your Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman's more at the front of the mouth.
There was definitely some Alan Rickman in there.
It's all just Alan Rickman.
At this point, it's all just Rickman. Pure Rickman. Yeah. The Peter Lorre. Why? I think the question they asked themselves was, why not? It's like, it doesn't matter
I have to do a voice. He's like a little wizened sorcerer dude.
Yeah, sycophantic.
Sycophantic. Why not?
And that's the thing, is it's like, it doesn't matter if anyone gets it. People are still going to laugh at it because it's funny. So therefore, we'll just do it. Like, there's a very good shot at the beginning of the film when the turtles go to take over another kingdom and something is burning down and that character...
Sorry, this is an air, right?
Yeah, indeed. That's right. I'm getting very confused. I'm like, all films are basically the same film, Rob. Yes, it is air. And that character is watching the things burn, but he wears glasses and the flames are reflected in his glasses and he has this like a beatific grin on his face as he's watching it. And it's like, there is a delirium to this film that I am...
But it's also like...
I'm vibing with.
It's also like, is that also like Apocalypse Now? Are we also doing...
Well, that would tie into the original one with Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, exactly. Are we referencing Kilgore now?
I don't think it's anything like that, but that would reference something that leans into Apocalypse Now, because there's a very, very similar shot in Kong Skull Island.
Oh, God, now I've said that. Isn't the name of Michelle Rodriguez's character in Dungeons & Dragons something Kilgore? It's like Helga Kilgore.
Well, we can have a look, but...
Oh, God. It's a swirling vortex.
It's just a big broth, a spicy broth of things, and you just... Yeah. Anyway, so... Ultimately, at the end of all of that, it was like, well, there's a lot to digest in there from a pop culture point of view, and what does this mean for modern filmmaking? The artistry of that, I thought, was sometimes absolutely gorgeous to look at. Ultimately, though, it's like a 90-minute movie. It's like, oh, I was quite charmed by that. I thought that was good, and I did laugh consistently. Yeah. So it was a nice surprise. Then, that evening, I watched Super Mario Brothers. So not the Super Mario Brothers movie, but Super Mario Brothers, the 1993 film.
Also known as Super Mario Brothers, the movie. Things simple.
Yeah, indeed. So this is one of those films that has a terrible reputation. It's seen as one of the great misfires of cinema. None of the cast have a good word to say about the film. They all hated making it. Released in 93, directed by Annabelle Jankel and Rocky Morton, I think.
Who are otherwise best known for?
Max Headroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is apparently why producer Ronan Yoffe sought them out.
So Max Headroom was very, very 80s. Originally, it was a film. It was a film made for TV. It was an hour long, which meant that with adverts, it came in at about 75 minutes. And there was nothing like it. The original Max Headroom film, have you seen that?
No.
I adored it when I was a kid. It deals with things... It's very, very Blade Runner. It's very, very inspired by Blade Runner. But there's some Brazil in there as well. It's about a cameraman and a reporter, if I'm remembering this correctly. And they basically discover an evil plot by a corporation to control people. So there's elements of 1984 in there as well. It's a dystopian future. One of the things that I've always remembered is that they've got the blipvert. And the blipvert is an advert that crams 30 seconds of advertising into 3 seconds. And decided so we can get more advertising out there. It was very, very prescient about we need to basically get people to buy more stuff and we need to think of new ways to beguile people
into buying things. And this is an attention culture
That's right. And something that would now be seen as problematic was that they realised that people who maybe are more sedentary and not in the best shape and maybe have weight issues, when they watch the Blipvert, the sensory overload...
Wait, sorry, if you can hear a different sound quality, it's because we've had to move room because one of the neighbours is mowing the lawn or trimming a hedge or...
Is making a noise.
Or it's the other dimension breaking through.
That's right, yes. So yeah, just to quickly finish off about the Blipvert. So they realise that people who are overweight and sedentary and don't get much exercise, when they see the Blipvert, the sensory overload causes them to swell and explode. And they say, well, but it works for most people, so maybe we could live with that. And yeah, this guy, again, if I remember it correctly, this guy, I think, gets kind of knocked out. I'm not sure if he's killed, if he's like RoboCop, but his consciousness basically gets put into a computer, becomes Max Headroom, which is like a CGI recreate or like a digitized recreation of this guy. He then became just a celebrity in his own right during the 80s and had like a talk show where he would interview people, but there were glitches and he would have like a stutter where it was like it would glitch because this was a computer simulation. Really ahead of its time. And the Max Headroom character against the moving background, it all looked a bit like the Money for Nothing video.
And he was played by Matt Frewer, wasn't he?
And was played by Matt Frewer. Became, for about a year or so, just a pop icon, like a sensation. And I got really excited when I heard that the Super Mario Brothers movie was going to be directed by the directors, the husband and wife team of Annabelle Jankel and Rocky Morton, who had done the Max Headroom film. And then I think they did the series as well. The film came out. It was panned. No one had a good word to say about it. There were lots of rumours that there'd been fights between the directors and the cast and the producers. And it just sounded like the worst shoot ever. It's produced by Roland Joffé, who did The Killing Fields, and he directed The Mission. So he was known for prestige adult dramas.
It's almost like they weren't the right people to produce and direct an adaptation of a kid's video game.
Well, Roland Joffé, to his credit, knew that this was going to be a kid's movie, immediately clashed with the directors who wanted to do something much more adult.
He hired them!
Yeah, I know.
Surely, was that not a conversation? What do you want to do with the project? You're hired.
But the original script that was by Dick Clement and Ian Lefrenny, who have a very interesting Hollywood career because they're the sitcom team. They did things like Porridge. So they were great sitcom writers in this country. But they also did a script polish on The Rock for Sean Connery because he said, you need to make my dialogue better. So they did a script polish on that. So they had this kind of weird secret, almost Hollywood screenwriting history. Apparently their script was very good, but it sounds quite dark as well, and it's all about the abandonment issues that the brothers have.
But do you know apparently who did another pass on the script?
Go on.
Barry Morrow?
Who was?
Wrote Rain Man.
Yes, but they said that his script was too similar to Rain Man.
To the extent they called it Drain Man.
That's very good. Yeah, so it's like, okay, so you've got these guys who do British sitcoms, you've got this guy that did Rain Man, these people did Max Headroom, and it's by the producer of The Mission. Well, this isn't going to work because you don't know how to make kids' films. It's so misconceived in terms of... It has nothing to do with the game almost at all. And everything to do with Brazil and Total Recall and 1984 and Mad Max. And it's like...
It's a dystopian black comedy, which, as you said, again, has nothing to do with... I mean, you've got the Cooper character, King Cooper, who's played by Dennis Hopper, as you said offline, as like... a Trump figure.
Yeah, because he also played a Trump figure in the George Romero film Land of the Dead. But yeah,
But he's meant to be a lizard in the film.
Yeah.
Not a person. And it's like this whole thing about evolution and de-evolution. And actually, I lied earlier because Princess Daisy apparently is a different character, is a separate character from Princess Peach, who appeared in a later Mario game.
Right, okay.
And she's specifically a love interest of Luigi, rather than in the same way that Peach is for Mario.
Well, that's the thing, is that... The one thing that the Super Mario Brothers film, the 93 film, added, that was then accepted as canon, is the romance between Luigi and Daisy. That was the one thing that kind of resonated with fans and was then incorporated into the film. But you watch the film and it's like, well, it's all about the world was hit by a meteorite and that ended the dinosaurs, but it also split reality into two different realities. And one of them evolved, everything evolved from the dinosaurs and lizards. The other one evolved from mammals, and that's our world. And
do you know who the narrator is in that section?
I do, but go on.
Dan Castellaneta.
Yes, indeed.
A.K.A. Homer Simpson.
Yes. And that was added on afterwards.
Homer Simpson from Day of the Locust.
Yeah. Oh, God! It's all just swirling around. That was added on afterwards when test audiences said, I don't know what any of that film was about. And they basically had to say at the beginning, there are two different dimensions.
Apparently Matt Groening did get the name Homer Simpson from Dead by Locust. That was a direct lift.
That's brilliant. That's so brilliant. It's so not in keeping with that character.
Oh, no.
It is weird, the parallels between that old movie and the new Super Mario movie. Like, they both open in New York, if you ignore the prologue with the dinosaurs. They both open in Brooklyn. They
the
both
brothers
have
are struggling. And
the brothers are struggling. They then are on a job and get sucked into another dimension where they basically have to protect the princess. And it's like, well, I know that some of this might be from the games, but the way that you have structured this seems to be, you kind of got the basic structure of how you can tell this story right. Everything else about it was wrong, including the fact that it's live action. It should be animated. The look of this, it kind of reminded me of Mars on Total Recall.
And as you said, lots of Brazil.
Brazil.
Like the car chases and the...
But also like music videos, like Russell Mulcahy music videos, like the Duran Duran Wild Boys music video. It's weirdly kinky as well. Like, there's a weird police force who are kind of just a private army for the Dennis Hopper Cooper character. One of them at one point is getting like a neck massage from a stilettoed foot. And it's like, what is the fucking tone of this film? And also, who was this for?
Fiona Shaw's in it.
Fiona Shaw, who's great
as like Cooper's girlfriend.
What's she called in it?
She is called Lena. And they've got the character of Toad in here, who is just a busker in this film.
He is, but did you notice, because they couldn't do CGI characters at this point, apart from Yoshi the dinosaur, who is sometimes a CGI character, who's not in the new film, that the haircuts were basically reflecting the characters. So Toad has that kind of mushroom swirl on top of his, that's his haircut.
Toad, who they originally wanted to be played by Tom Waits.
And there was another thing. Dennis Hopper also has like a bit of a lizard. What would you call it?
Spiky
kind of crown effect with his hair. That actually looks a lot like Donald Trump. And it's like, oh Jesus, this is such a weird film. The action though, there's car chases and explosions, and none of it works really well.
And the fact that, like, you know, Lance Henriksen is in it as a cameo,
and gets quite high billing. Yeah, that was weird when he popped up. It was like, were his scenes cut? Because I don't see how they could be cut, but. He gets quite high billing at the end. There's also, did you see the end credit sequence?
No.
It's actually quite funny. There's a scene, they could even be the original guys from Nintendo, but there are two Japanese businessmen who say, we would love to make a video game that's based on your adventures. Then it cuts to the two sidekicks on the couch saying, yeah, we can call it this, we could call it this, we could call it this.
You mean like the Fisher Stevens and Richard Edson characters?
That's the one, yeah. And that actually made me laugh. That was a good gag. It's at the very end of the movie after all the credits. There was something else. Yeah. So this film, it was fascinating to watch. It was ultimately just too long at hour 44. For about the first hour, I thought this is absolutely fascinating because it's also very, very 90s and you realise just how long ago that was. And also, it's one of those where it's like, I can see why this was hated. Because if you love the game, this is a travesty. This is an absolute travesty of everything that you'd love about the game. It shits on the game. It shits all over the magic. That said, Bob Hoskins and Don Leguizamo have great chemistry.
Yeah.
I mean, they are great together. It's like, well, I completely believe they are the Mario Brothers. They're really endearing. They obviously care for each other and look out for each other. This is watchable because of them. And Dennis Hopper's just kind of doing his villain thing. He would do it a lot better a year later in Speed.
There's a scene in which they put Dennis Hopper in a hopper, like a worksite hopper. You know, for example, like you'd use it for carrying rocks, like pebbles, and then you pull it and then they all come down. They put him in a hopper and I'm like, is this a pun? Is this like you literally didn't know how to end this scene? So you thought, Hopper, Dennis Hopper, we're going to put him in a hopper. It doesn't serve a narrative purpose. It doesn't really make sense for where it is in the film.
But it's things like that with the... Because, I mean, I thought, is that something that's in the game and they just lifted it from the game?
Almost certainly not, based on the rest of the thing.
Yeah. But the power-up stuff, like the... So in this, they don't eat the mushrooms, but there's a whole thing about mushrooms. And the mushrooms was... It's almost like a Cronenbergian way that is dealt with. Or something from the Andromeda Strain or something. It's very hard sci-fi in terms of having, like, a sentient fungi that leads the narrative as well. And it's like, okay, so you're doing that.
It's like, why didn't you just make this a straight adventure movie? And I guess on one hand, it's like, oh, we don't want to paint everything in primary colours because Dick Tracy's just done that.
But that made money.
Also just like,
Yeah, maybe it was too difficult to recreate the feel of the game outside of animation, which is why it makes sense to be animation. Because, I guess the danger is that, not even, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but you would just end up making Takeshi's Castle, which would be great. I love Takeshi's Castle.
They should have done that. That's the thing, is that they have the power boots in this, don't they? They're kind of springy boots that means they can jump around. And it's like, so you're trying to almost do like a Chris Nolan and
ground it,
have real world explanations for how they can do things that they do in the game. The opening, which is all in like a rainstorm, and there's a baby being abandoned at a Catholic orphanage and things like that. It's like, this predicts the way that superhero films would be told. This is very, I mean, you can say it's coming off the back of Burton, but this seems very early noughties in terms of that dark and gritty look of superhero films. The one thing that all those films, I mean, Superman is still recognisably Superman in a Zack Snyder film, even if he gets the character wrong. The thing about this is that not recognisably...
They're not even dressed in red and green, are they?
Well, not for most of the film.
No.
66 minutes in, they get dressed up in their trademark brightly coloured plumber's costumes. And it is quite good when you see them, but even then, the entrance shot is a bit throwaway. Could you go onto IMDb and go to the trivia on IMDb? It has a 4.1 score on IMDb. That is probably about right. Sorry, Samantha Mathis is the princess in this. She was good. She's not got much to do, but she was a very, very likable presence in film at that time. She was in Pump Up the Volume. She was in Broken Arrow. She was one of those. She was in Little Women. She was a very good actor who you can argue wasn't given much of a career later on. But I just want to call out a couple of quotes. There's a couple of quotes that just made me laugh. So in a 2001 interview with The Guardian, Bob Hoskins described the film's production. It was a fucking nightmare. The whole experience was a nightmare. It had a husband and wife team directing whose arrogance had been mistaken for talent. After so many weeks, their own agent told them to get off the set. Fucking nightmare. Fucking idiots.
And there's also the great quote from him to paraphrase it, that's been doing the rounds, where he's talked about, he didn't even know it was a video game when he first started, until his son, showed him, it's like, Dad, look, you're in the video game movie. Showed him the little sprite, jumping around the screen, to which Bob Hoskins made first thought was, I played King Lear.
Yeah, it's like, I love that. The fact that Tom Hanks was considered for the role of Luigi, but because of Turner and Hooch and Joe vs. the Volcano being flops, the studio didn't think that he was a draw anymore, is just brilliant. Loads of people were considered for the bad guy. There was Michael Keaton was considered to play Cooper. Schwarzenegger, Kevin Costner. I mean, this was an expensive film. It's also, I think that Dennis Hopper said, I was supposed to turn up for 5 weeks of filming. I was there for 17 weeks. It went so over schedule, so over budget. It was a complete disaster. I mean,
Danny DeVito was at one point cast as Mario, was meant to play Mario, as was Bruno Kirby. But, I can't think of Bruno Kirby outside of Godfather Part 2.
I can't think of him out of his repeated appearances on the Larry Sanders Show, where he was always bumped. And I said, there's another one with Bob Hoskins. Here we go. Okay, so about Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel. So apparently they were just really, really terrible and control freaks, but didn't know what they were doing half the time. They would rewrite the script so much that the script would just be called a rainbow because of the new pages that were being delivered. But they would get changed so often that people just didn't even read it in the end, until they were actually shooting the scene, would say, right, what's this one? Okay, right, okay then. Yeah, the film crew would regularly refer to them by insulting nicknames and even had T-shirts made that displayed rude comments made by the directors. So Bob Hoskins referred to them as the c**t and the cow. So I might even bleep a little bit of that C word, because that's such a strong thing.
Have you? There's also the wonderful Dennis Hopper quote. I made a film called Super Mario Brothers, and my six-year-old son at the time, he's now 18, he said, Dad, I think you're probably a pretty good actor, but why did you play that terrible guy, King Cooper, in Super Mario Brothers? And I said, well, Henry, I did that so you could have shoes. And he said, Dad, I don't need shoes that badly.
Yeah, so brilliant. John Leguizamo said that he and Bob Hoskins just got drunk while making it to get through the film. Also, John Leguizamo accidentally broke Bob Hoskins' finger when he slammed a door. And he said that Bob Hoskins immediately just let out a furious amount of expletives. And some of it, I couldn't even understand what he was saying. And then he just immediately forgave me. So it sounds like they kind of liked each other and got each other through this film.
Which is really sweet. And I like the thought of that.
But apparently the cast that they had for his finger, they then painted pink so that it looked like his hand. And I think there's one shot in the film where I thought, oh, was that it? I must go back. And then I just forgot. But they did the same thing for Jackie Chan. There was a Jackie Chan film.
I think he broke his ankle whilst making it. So they had the cast put on, then they painted the cast to look like a trainer, and it kind of works okay. I mean, there's only like a few times, and oh, I suppose I can see that, yeah. Anyway, that was a Super Mario Brothers film, and the new one is really good. The old one is just a curio if you are interested in what an early 90s misfire looks like. And also, there was a dinosaur in it. It was released in 93, the year of Jurassic Park. So it got trounced by a much better dinosaur film.
Yes, I'm sure that's why it failed.
Yeah, indeed. Not because it was completely misconceived from beginning to end.
And we both wanted to watch the 2000 Dungeons & Dragons film, and like I just didn't have... Well, we're recording this a day early, which is my excuse.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't think we needed to see that. Because in much the way that the original Dungeons & Dragons film is widely regarded as being terrible, the new Dungeons & Dragons film, pretty good. Like,
I loved it. I loved that. Would you like to do the honours again? Look at this. I'm just making you do my bidding. I'm worse than Jeremy Irons in the original film.
Should I try and do some sort of voice? I don't know what happened.
You could sing it like the Chris Pine character does when he gets his loot.
Should I just try and do it to the tune of Green Thieves? A charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers embark on an epic quest to retrieve a lost relic. But things go dangerously awry when they run afoul of the wrong people.
Yeah, that works. Do you want to do one for safety?
A charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers embark on...
That's actually harder to hear than the other one, so do you want to do it a bit more regular?
A charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers embark on an epic quest to retrieve a lost relic, but things go dangerously awry when they run afoul of the wrong people.
So, this one, it's very interesting that the poster says no experience necessary, because I think that when people see Dungeons & Dragons...
They think, is this going to be inside baseball?
Yeah, they think, is this going to be something that's going to appeal to people who have played the game, know the game, is going to be impenetrable to anyone who hasn't done that? And that, I think, is a wise decision. Because again, when I heard that they were making a Dungeons & Dragons film, it's like, well, I have no interest in that. Then the reviews started coming out saying, actually, this is really good. And it's like, okay, well, then I might go and see it after work then. Yeah, I'm really glad I did. Because it's like, you don't need to know anything about Dungeons & Dragons to enjoy this movie. And I saw it, I think, the end of the week that I saw John Wick Chapter 4. And the more I think about John Wick Chapter 4, the more I think that was an unforgivable movie. It was unforgivable that you made a film that was longer than The Godfather and told that fucking story. No. That cut, it was longer than the original cut of Apocalypse Now. Ugh. And I watched this one and thought, oh, wow, this is so annoying that this is going to do not as much money in its opening weekend as John Wick Chapter 4 did, because everyone talking about the world building of John Wick Chapter 4 and the world building, it's such a great world building. It's like, it's some quite inventive production design that papers over the complete lack of story or any kind of character or real believable world in that film. The world building in Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, to give the full title, is really good, because it's like, well, from like a standing start, you have laid out all these different groups of people. You have this kind of clan, and you have this kingdom, and you have these that can do this, and these have these magical powers.
And you're doing it on the move.
You're doing it on the move. You're flashing back to tell what is sometimes ancient history, sometimes recent history for the characters, all on the move, because it's basically like a heist movie. And I thought, this is what people should be saying is great world building. It's baked into the script, and it's influencing character, and the characters are being shaped by the world around them and how they are having to interact with it. This is a really, really good script.
Yeah, and the script is written by... the screenplay was written by Michael Gillio with a story by Chris McKay, who did... What's the best one to talk about? Lego Batman.
Could you look up the other two as well? Because I think they've got form as well.
Well, John Francis Daly, for what used to be was best known as an actor, he's in Freaks and Geeks. Yeah. He did Bones... and
so he wrote Bones, did he, or did he?
No, he was an actor in Bones. He was the one that you main cast. But he did Spider-Man Homecoming, so...
Yes, that's
and,
it,
and,
yes.
And he co-directed Game Night. Him and Jonathan Goldstein.
And Spider-Man Homecoming was the big one where it's like, okay, right, so you can do this.
This is so well judged. Yeah,
and you can get various things within the universe and put them into one film and have it be understandable. So that was a good element. Another thing I was thinking was like, well, this has characters in it, proper characters, and I care about these characters, and I don't want them to fail, and I don't want them to get hurt, and I actually believe what is happening.
And they have arcs, individual, and they're funny for different reasons.
And also, it's like, I completely believe this world of dragons and reanimated corpses and hither-thither sticks where you can put a portal and then you can put another one over there and walk through and jump across space.
Like, and also, like, I think 99% of it, basically 99% of it, is also D&D lore accurate.
Well, that's the other thing, is that because the owlbear...
Which you don't need to know.
Absolutely, because the owlbear, which is like a shapeshifter, is also in the game.
Well, she shouldn't technically be able to turn into an owlbear, and I'm trying to remember the exact reason behind that. I think because it's technically a beast rather than... But there's like a... I think that's like the 1%, which isn't entirely lore accurate.
I think our virginity just grew back with you saying that. All of that, at the end of the week, after I'd seen... I started the week watching John Wick Chapter 4. I ended the week watching Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, and it was like, I'm sorry, but this is how you do a good action film. You don't just fill it with a ton of action that becomes monotonous. You put other things in between it. Some of the action is really exciting. Some of it is quite comic. There's a scene when the shapeshifter has to escape from a castle. And it's all done in that impossible one shot. The imagination in that and everything that's going
changing
on around
forms
it.
And...
Absolutely, all of that stuff is like... We have seen this in other things before, but when it's done well, it's just always a joy to watch. And the imagination here.
And there's a magical
great.
Heist scene, and there's a. And it's
and
like.
The whole thing is like a heist, and there's. And the. I mean, to get into some of the story, yeah, we haven't even talked about the characters yet. So who are the characters in this film?
The characters are Edgin Darvis, who's a bard, who's. Well, he's a bard. He's kind of how we understand the concept of a bard, as opposed to how the game understands the concept of the bard, because he doesn't really use any bardic. He might, like, might. In this, it's apparently the director, or might have been the writer, said that he's somebody playing a bard who doesn't really care about the magic aspect. Because apparently the way that they treated it is it's almost like, it's not winking, it's not fourth wall breaking, but it is like people playing those roles, like playing those classes.
You have Michelle Rodriguez as Holger Kilgore. So very, very good shout. And she is a barbarian, so she can bring the noise and can bring the muscle. Chris Pine is like a bit of a charmer. He's not very good with his fists. He has great muscle in the form of Holger. You have Regé Jean Page, who is the wizard, isn't he? Is he the...
Yes.
Is he the
well,
lad?
Wait, no, he's the paladin. Zenk Yendar.
Yes.
Who's the paladin, who's the kind of noble figure who strides through the world and has great purpose and great an endless supply of aphorisms.
And he's almost like a mentor figure in terms of, like, he's a bit of a kind of hunky Obi-Wan Kenobi, isn't he? Is,
what do you mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yeah.
And then you've got the wizard, who's Simon, who's played by Justice Smith, who's a sorcerer who doesn't seem to be very good at that. And he's got his own arc within that. Justice Smith, who was in Pokemon Detective Pikachu, which was the first live action of a Nintendo game since Super Mario Brothers.
Yes, which I haven't seen, but apparently is good.
Yeah.
Sophia Lillis... is Doric. She's the shapeshifter, basically.
A tiefling druid.
Yes.
And Sophia Lillis, who people would probably know from It.
Yeah, she played the young Bev in It, didn't she?
Yeah.
And she was also in Sharp Objects.
Yeah, she's kind of best known for playing the young versions of very famous redheaded actresses.
Yes, indeed, that's right.
Well, yeah, whether it's Jessica Chastain or Amy Adams.
So this, she just plays a character. She was very good. And Hugh Grant plays like a con man, basically, who is now the lord of a city. And he has previous with all the heroes. He was once in their gang. And Daisy Headers, Safina, a red wizard of Fae. And she basically is in the employment of Hugh Grant because she is very, very powerful and can bring him like all the riches that he thinks is owed to him. So basically, Edgin needs to reconcile with his daughter, played by Chloe Coleman. She was recently in 65 as Adam Driver's daughter. So she plays daughters. Two hunks.
And that's one with dinosaurs in it.
That's got dinosaurs in it.
Oh,
see, it is
God.
Just a swirling prof.
Stop it.
It's just a swirling prof. But essentially, this is a heist movie. It's getting the gang together. It's going on a mission. It's rescuing the princess. There's that aspect in there as well. It's breaking into the Fortress Kingdom. So it's literally the Hidden Fortress, the Kurosawa film, and Star Wars that was inspired by Hidden Fortress, the Kurosawa film.
And there's a very unexpected cameo in it, which we can say.
Is there?
Yeah, I would say he's a pretty unexpected...
Yes, there is. But I wouldn't give that away because I was quite surprised. We can give that away maybe at the very end.
Yeah.
But yes, it was like, was he originally cast as Edgin and then... said no and they put him in anyway. Anyway, but we'll get to that.
We could get to that. I think that character only works because if it's someone really famous, then you're like, that's just immediately funny.
Particularly who is playing is like, okay, that's just odd and funny. This one I thought was great. All these elements work really well. And it also had an old-fashioned feel to it that, to make me feel really old, when I say old-fashioned, I mean Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. So that was 32 years ago.
Like a charming kind of swashbuckling.
Swashbuckling.
And fantasy adventure feel that's almost like it should have been the template for some other stuff.
This is a swashbuckler, but it's a swashbuckler that feels very much of the early 90s when...
Oh, that's sort of like Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, no, that was mid-90s. I mean, Prince of Thieves. When the stunts and the spectacle was of a level that could be achieved by jumps in special effects. Some of the special effects in this film kind of reminded me of the Golden Compass a little bit. They're not the best special effects, but that adds to the charm. Yeah. It's like there is an otherworldly charm to this I'm really, really warming to. From beginning to end, it was like, this is exactly what I want in an action-adventure film. It's funny, it's exciting. There's a heist that is like Inception. It's like the way that they kind of bend space is like, well, this is like Inception. This is just fucking great. And there's just so much imagination going on in this movie. And it doesn't stop. To your point, it's like all of this is told on the move. Brilliant. And it's not monotonous. Ugh.
And I mean,
John Wick 4 is quickly going to become my worst film of the year, I think.
It helps that I saw this film on my final day in Amsterdam at the Theatre Chisinski, which is a lovely old-fashioned, and it's like halfway between, like, the exterior looks like the Tower of Terror, like the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, and the interior is like if whoever designed the Overlook got into cinema design. It's like, you know, Art Deco, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And we're in this massive space, the space that was at least on the same scale as the Odeon Leicester Square. And they were like, wow, half a dozen of us in there? And it's like, yes.
It is quite nice when I've got the place to myself. I'm so happy. And this film, I think, did about 35 million in its opening weekend. John Wick 4 did 75 million.
I mean, this should get a sequel.
Well, I was thinking, hopefully it will, but who knows? Because I think it will probably do maybe about 200 million around the world, maybe. Is that enough to get it a sequel? I hope so, because it was great. We are going to feed that belly soon, Rob.
It's the gelatinous cube. The cube that eats people.
Oh, sorry, yes, indeed, yes. Yes, it is, that's right. So many things in this
film. And Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant has a scene with a cup of tea that is still making me laugh. Just the sense of humour in this film is really on my level, and it's so funny that there is a cup of tea that he is making an entire scene out of. Did it have an end credit scene, I think?
It did.
It did, didn't it? Yeah.
If we're going to do a very brief spoiler bit, I have a better punchline too.
Okay, right, cool. Talking about a sequel, did you like the end of the movie proper, the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Yes.
That sets it up for a sequel. Yes. Almost like a Back to the Future type thing, wasn't it?
Marty!
Okay, so you set it up for a sequel, but anyway. But yeah, Dungeons & Dragons, I would say, is the best film that I've seen. Well, no, sorry, that would be Loader, obviously. But in terms of films that you can find at the cinema, I would say that Dungeons & Dragons is the one that you should go and... Because it's just... I just loved it. Thought it was a blast.
All the films that we've talked about today, with the exception... All the new films that we've talked about today, which, to reiterate, are Air, Tetris, Mario Brothers, Dungeons & Dragons... Was there another one?
Lola.
And Lola. We would recommend them all?
Yeah, indeed, definitely. Pretty good run of films right now. And the next episode, we'll be talking about Evil Dead Rise. Very high hopes for indeed. So we'll see about that. Is there anything else to say about Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves? And I think that your rumbling stomach is saying, no, it's fucking not.
No, just the one little tiny thing to say in the spoiler and then...
Okay, cool. Well, shall we do the outro and then get into spoilers?
Yeah.
Before we do that, very quickly about John Wick Chapter 4, because I haven't talked about it enough. I thought... that Scott Adkins played two different roles in that film. He plays one, doesn't he?
Yes.
He is the...
He's killer.
From Austin Powers. The kind of a fat bastard
with
character.
With a bit of Vegas showman and a bit of one of the Nazi generals.
And he's wearing a fat suit.
Yeah.
Because on the podcast, it was like, Rob must have been so confused when I was talking about this, saying he's really, really bulked up for this. It's like, no, he was wearing a fat suit. It's like, I mean the other role he played. I thought he just played the henchman to...
No.
No. Because I just thought that was Scott Adkins as well, and thought, Scott Adkins has massively bulked up for this movie. So he's got two roles there, so he's playing this.
So you thought he was doing like a proper Mike Myers?
I thought he was doing a proper... Because Scott Adkins is like, well, I have to say that the guy who did play the henchman then has proper martial art chops as well, because he was Scott Adkins good. But it's like, so Scott Adkins played one role in that film. I thought I was seeing him in two different roles in that film. My God, that film did take me on a journey. And sometimes it was like, I think I'm just imagining a more interesting story and casting story than I'm actually seeing in this film. So on that note, if people wanted to hear more about your thoughts on film and stuff in general on the internet, where can they do that?
Oh, yeah. If you're looking for me online, you can find me on Twitter at Robin M. Wallace. You can find my writing, such as it is, at Of All The Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. If you've enjoyed this and just think, I wish they'd be focused more on one film, then boy. yes, we've got a separate podcast on devoted entirely to a scene-by-scene analysis, enjoyment of the movie, the cult classic, 1986 cult classic, Highlander. The pod is called Another Time McLeod. You can find it wherever you're listening to this. It's also available. You can also, follow that on Twitter at McLeod Time, or drop us a Highlander themed email, and you know you want to, at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com.
On that note, though, if you also think, do you know what? I do like it when they go off on tangents about different things. Then, boy, do we have a podcast for you. It's called Another Time in the Cloud. It looks at that cult classic Highlander, seen by Gloria Sean,
through the lens of everything ever. Every film and TV show, and just, I think we talk about Tesco. There's one where we just talk about Tesco meal deals. There's the sex scene episode where I talk a lot about Bernard Cribbins.
Yes, that's right. So, again, all of pop culture is just a swirling broth, and
drink deep.
We drink deep from that swirling broth for Another Time McLeod.
And but the vomit focus, at you like a baby bird.
But the focus is on that cult classic Highlander. Cool, thank you very much. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at @Rob_A_Daniel. You can follow me on Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/RobDan. You can read my writing at electric-shadows.com, including a 5-star review of Lola. Leaving that in. And if you want to drop us an email about anything movie related, then you can do that at movierobcast@gmail.com. Oh, we're also on Instagram. You can follow us at TheMovieRobcast on Instagram. And if you've liked what you've heard, and let's face it, with all that stuff about crack,
if you've made it to this point, yeah, we're assuming you've liked what you've heard.
And if you've enjoyed all the chat about all the different things we've talked about, then why not rate and or review us wherever you listen to your podcast? It always helps us with the algorithms. And to be honest, it is always appreciated. And let's face it, everyone likes leaving a star rating. It's fun for you as well. So on that note, on that thirsty note, we're going to talk about some spoilers for Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, it's literally just my going, I think that would have been funnier.
And also the cameo.
And also the cameo.
So if you haven't seen it yet, then don't listen. And thank you very much. If you have, then well, you can listen to this bit, obviously. And we'll be coming at you again with Evil Dead Rise very, very soon.
Ooh, fresh meat for the grinder.
Pay him no heed. He is cute, but he is.
There's gotta be a way out of here.
There's no escape. The only hope is the sweet relief of death.
Whoa! Oh, you've got to be kidding me!
Okay, you're now in the spoiler section, so if you haven't seen Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, then just don't listen. The cameo...
Bradley Cooper.
Who plays a little elfish-type character who...
Well, plays a halfling.
A halfling.
Literally a halfling. That's why it's very Hobbit.
Yes, okay, yeah, yeah.
It plays Marlamin.
Who left his halfling tribe to have a love affair with a barbarian, who is the Holger character played by Michelle Rodriguez. And it's very sweet when they have their scene together about how he loved her, but she couldn't
move past having left her tribe. Yeah, and it is very sweet, and it's played straight, despite the fact it's like they're doing Hobbit-style effects, so that he's, you know, on the chair, and his chair's big, and he's small, and it's Bradley Cooper, and
she's absolutely massive. So that was nice. It was like, were you cast as the lead in this film at one point, and then said, I can't do it, but I'll do this?
No, I think almost certainly not, just because that role only really works if it's somebody stupidly famous.
Cool, and what was the end credit scene?
The end credit scene is one of the corpses that they've brought back, and if they have to ask it 5 questions, and then it will return to death, which is quite Hellboy, isn't it?
Yes.
And they only ask it 4 questions, and then they leave. And it returns to that character being like, hey, anyone there? Da, da, da. I think after it asked a question rhetorically, it should have gone thunk. It should have died again.
But it has to be asked a question rather than asking the question itself.
We get into owlbear territory, exactly. So, like,
would the fans be angry with that? Apparently the fans were quite pleased with the owlbear.
I've got some friends who know much more about D&D than I do, and they really enjoyed it.
Okay, right. Yes, I did think that was quite funny when they dig up the first corpse and keep accidentally asking questions, and then it dies really quickly because they got to their 5. Was that a question? Yes, it was.
It's like, yeah, only answer questions when I speak to you, okay? Why did you say okay?
That's it. They have to dig up someone else because they've used up all their questions.
And you're getting little flashbacks to the battle and how various people died. And the one guy who just slipped and just whacked his head on the bathtub.
Didn't even get to the battle. Or that one that you think is going to be, yes, I held it and I was given it to look after and then I died immediately. By the next person. Okay, right. Rob's stomach is just roaring like a dragon right now. It's roaring like that pudgy dragon in the hell thing they go to. So we need to end this. So thank you very much. Evil Dead Rise. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully it'll be as good as...
By the pudgy red dragon, of course, Themba Chowd.
Sorry, say that again.
Themba Chowd, the red dragon.
Right, okay, yes. The pudgy dragon.
The pudgy dragon.
These are good names, right? Anyway, we'll come at you again. Thank you very much. And we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
What is it exactly that you bring to this?
I'm a planner. I make plans.
You've already made the plan, so...
If the existing plan fails, I make a new plan.
So you make plans that fail?
No.
He also plays the lute.
Not relevant.